Ladies and gentlemen, episode 93 of Three Brothers Talking. Here we are. We're started. We're rolling. We are recording this episode. Jeremy is drinking the drink that he did not spill into his computer today.
Yeah. It's one of those days, man. Computers just... Thankfully, it wasn't anything important.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a computer.
Just a computer.
Well, it was a part of the computer that had no ports, so... Well, it did have ports. I don't know.
It'll be all right. We're doing all right. Hey, it's working now. We're recording now.
That's the other computer. My other computer. Yeah. So, I don't have a whole studio arrangement here. Yeah. I'm professional.
Well, this is David, by the way.
I'm Andrew.
And I'm Jeremy, as you may have guessed.
Yeah, they probably put that together.
I'm sure we have a lot of long-time listeners now.
Long-time listeners, that's right.
Maybe a few.
Well, we came together tonight because it's election night, and we just wanted to talk about the election. So,
that's all we're talking about.
Tonight, we're going to talk about everyone we voted for in grave detail.
In depth.
if you want to know about the Central Ohio Municipal Court judge candidates, this is the place to hear about it. That's what we're doing tonight, so... Buckle up.
Yeah. Buckle up.
That sounds like a waste of an hour.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. hopefully you're not panicking. Hopefully you weren't panicking. By the time you hear this, it surely will not be election night anymore for the midterms. I've heard that this is saving democracy tonight. Well, it's either saving it or losing
it.
Yeah,
I was like, I've heard it. Depends on your perspective. I've heard it's the end.
So, could be either or.
Who's to say?
Could be in the world as we know it, and I feel fine.
Who's to say? All I know is the person that is to say is apparently almost everyone on my entire Instagram feed.
Mm-hmm.
You need a better feed.
They are the ones who are to say. Hopefully you're not panicking. Hopefully your trust is not in your governors or your lack of them or whatever it may be. Every election day I listen to a few songs. I listened to an arrangement of Psalm 2. And then in a much less, well, it's still biblical attitude. It's just not scripture. The song, I think it's called The World is a Thorn by Demon Hunter. Yeah.
I was just listening to them.
The World is a Thorn is a good song for Election Day. So there you go.
It's a good album, too.
It is a good album, too. But before we get into the topic of the day, which I guess I am... In charge of choosing. So again, if this episode is bad, it's my fault, and
we blame David.
Like most people who are elected to office, I take zero responsibility.
We can also blame it on the elections too. Yeah,
we're just so distraught.
Yeah, I think
or
I'm just
so
not.
Happy. I guess it. I don't think either. I think any of us will be that distraught or that happy.
No, I'll wake up tomorrow pretty much the exact same.
Happy, if I have to say honestly, but it'll be what it is.
I was like, honestly, I think all of us are going to wake up the same tomorrow.
Wake up and go
regardless,
to work tomorrow.
Because all of us, you know, I think have
jobs.
Yeah, we have a perspective that it's not to worry about, really.
You can be a little bit. I mean, you can think about it and trust and talk about it. But yeah, not too over-obsess about it.
Well, and it matters. We're not some of the... I think it's kind of a... faux spirituality that is kind of popular today, just like a total
abandonment,
separation from it, of like how it's just not right to think about it at all, or it's not right to put any effort or anything into it. I don't think that at all. I think that God has given us guidance there. He's given us wisdom about how we ought to operate in it. But for most of us, and I would say a lot of our culture that we actually live in, it's an idol. So, you know, you don't have to, you know, it's sort of like if you have a problem with greed, right? You go to like 1 Timothy, the thief is told that he should learn how to make money and be generous, not how to become poor, right? And I think it's a similar sort of thing. To draw a really quick analogy, out of nowhere that I didn't think about ahead of time. Same way with politics. Like if it's an idol, you're not called to just like ignore it, act like it doesn't exist. You're called to figure out how to use it correctly. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Which, just really quickly, God made everything, and he has rules about what correctly means. So go to him about that. Now we're moving on. We're moving on. Political talk is done.
Enough of that.
That's enough of that. Jeremy wanted to talk about Justin Fields playing well for the Bears.
Oh, man. I just wanted to say that my quarterback did break a record, which is fairly amazing.
Talk about news. Yeah. Talk about news that's going to matter tomorrow.
If anything's going to matter, the fact that he broke a record that stood from 2002, which honestly I thought would have never been broken.
Michael Vick, ever. Right?
Especially, yeah, Michael Vick's single-game rushing record got beat by Justin Fields. I could have seen Lamar Jackson doing it or someone like that, but yeah. Honestly not Fields with our line.
Is it strange to anybody else to think about the fact that Michael Vick played 20 years ago?
Yeah, that's weird.
That makes me feel really old.
Mm-hmm.
Good grief. But
that's like I saw the commercial. Remember the commercial with like the roller coaster ride thing? Like they had like the shoe, like a Michael Vick experience.
No.
We'll put the link in the show notes. I'll send it over to you guys.
Please do, because like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's like a shoe commercial. But yeah.
It was so a roller coaster?
He broke that record. Yeah, it was a roll. I'll send the link. It's fantastic. Okay.
All right. This
is
like
the Michael Vick experience, like a Reebok commercial.
Like a Disneyland?
No, it's just it wasn't a real ride.
Cedar
it was
Point.
Like yeah, exactly. But then Justin Fields also is the only quarterback to have like 3 touchdowns in a game and a passing TD and 150 yards rushing and passing.
How cool would it be though if you went to a Cedar Point and there was an actual Michael Vick themed roller coaster?
Maybe we could get Cedar Point to sponsor the
Maybe
podcast.
Not.
Maybe get a roller coaster.
Maybe get some free passes.
Three it Brothers is, roller coaster.
I will commend it. I mean, we're all Ohio State fans, so obviously we're here for Justin Fields' success. And like
some of us more than others.
Yeah, and
you
like
know,
Jeremy's
legit,
a Bears fan too, so that only
I have
helps.
A Fields tattoo on my back now.
But it's astounding. Worship. All of us are in a fantasy league together, and it was astounding to me that.
I forgot to change it.
He went from literally weeks 1 to 5 or whatever it was. He was like the 31st or 32nd ranked QB.
For reference to people who don't really know, that would be almost dead last.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, there's 32 quarterbacks
starting
for starting quarterbacks.
To be in the 30s means you're doing real bad.
Yeah, you're among the worst in the league. And then he turned around, and now over the last 5 weeks, he's been QB1 officially.
Yeah,
man. And
I forgot to put
that
him
means
on my
good.
Fantasy starting team for the past 3 weeks. So
you
know,
gotta roll, dude.
You've been busy.
I forgot. I'll be honest. I forgot a lot about fantasy football this year. I got everyone I wanted, and then I haven't cared.
Yeah, with the church plant, I told Rachel this is the year that might like. I've been pretty good the last few years, and I just said, this is probably the year that I stink. And so,
but I got Justin Fields, and that was the one player I really wanted.
Now you see, like, the testament is there that, like, he's a dude, so, like, they just need to go out and get him some weapons.
Justin Fields.
Line. I mean, they have a first and a second now after the trade deadline, so they should be able to get a good lineman.
That's what I'm saying. You need to upgrade
good,
the line.
Get a good wide receiver.
Get a good wide out. Like, get him.
Got
get him
Chase
maybe,
Claypool now.
Well,
maybe get him JSN from Ohio State. Like, double up there. And
his old
he
buddy.
He might fall late, too, because he's been injured off and on.
Well,
so he might fall late.
Last thing we'll say about Justin Fields, because it's my episode, so I'm moving on. Last thing we'll say is that Justin Fields is a vegan. How about that?
Yeah.
No.
How about that?
He also doesn't use... He uses, like... Not real weights a lot.
Not real weights.
He doesn't do like in the weight room. He doesn't do a lot of. He does mostly.
He does
like a bow flex. He does bow flex.
Stuff.
Like resistance training. Yeah.
He's on that.
What Tom Brady.
He's
does.
On that Tom Brady methodology.
Well,
I mean, it seems to be working for him.
Yeah.
So I'll give it to him right now.
If he had to lift weights, I'm sure he can lift more than me.
I'm sure
so.
He could. I mean, he's 6 foot.
I mean, the dude is still jacked.
280
so,
pounds. He's still ridiculously jacked.
Pretty monsters. So.
All right. Now to something completely different.
Speaking of, I don't know, something working for
Fields.
Somebody.
Fields. This has the word field in it, I think, somewhere.
Somewhere in there. So the idea that popped in my head today, it's actually been rolling around my brain the past few weeks, is this passage in Deuteronomy 4. So break out the Bibles, go to the Old Testament. Deuteronomy 4, midway through that chapter, actually near the beginning of that chapter. Now, the reason this came to my head is actually from an old... a couple times, actually, I've heard N.D. Wilson speak on this subject. So the subject is roughly, like, I almost don't know how to summarize it succinctly, but he talks about Christians, like, not being able to tell a good story with their lives. Like, they're, mm-hmm. that our lives are, like, ugly. And by ugly, yeah. he doesn't mean sinful. He means like boring and not happy or joyful and like
not a clear testament.
Yeah, not like an appealing thing. So he's talked about that. He actually had a recent episode of his podcast, which I think I can find and link to, where he talked about what proof is and what it means to prove something to someone. In his whole hypothesis that I think guides a lot of his writing, he's an author, if you don't know that. He's an author and a director, he's written TV series and stuff like that. His thing that about proof is that you don't... To prove something is to obligate somebody to believe it, and you don't do that merely through information. So you don't just, like... Mm-hmm. You don't just inform somebody to the truth. You have to, mm-hmm. like... Yep. Prove it. Like, this is the old classic way of thinking about how rhetoric works, is like there's the character of the speaker, there's the appeal of the speaker, there's the credibility, there's all those different things going on. And so that's something that he's kind of made a big deal about, and it's been rattling around in my brain because I thought about this in the last podcast he was doing. I thought about this passage in Deuteronomy. And I think that it's just it's a good way of putting it into like biblical words for us. So this is where we're going after. Hopefully it's clear as we get through this. It says this, Deuteronomy 4, verses 5 through 9. This is actually Moses speaking mm-hmm. as he is given them the law. And then he says this, "See, I have taught you statutes and rules as the Lord my God commanded me, that you should do them in the land that you are entering to take possession of it." So they're not in the promised land yet. Mm-hmm. "Keep them and do them, for that will be your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples, who, when they hear all these statutes, will say, 'Surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people.' For what great nation is there that has a God so near as the Lord our God is to us whenever we call on him? And what great nation is there that has statutes and rules so righteous as all this law that I set before you today? Only take care and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things that your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. Make them known to your children and your children's children." Hmm. So that is the passage that's been sticking in my brain. And actually, I think next week I'm going to be speaking about that with some other men at our church, which will be a lot of fun. But it's been in my head since then. So what's your guys' thoughts to that? I mean, you hear that passage. You think about this topic, sort of living a better story in our lives, Living a better story almost sounds like a cheesy way to phrase it. But I don't know, what are your guys' what's your reaction to that?
Are you talking about the reaction from a story perspective, I guess, or just the ability to tell this to the next generation cohesively?
Wherever you want,
living it out.
Wherever you want to go with it. Whatever thought springs out of you.
I've discussed this thing several times.
Yeah.
And this was on this week's podcast of The Stores for Soul Food. They talk about it. Not this passage directly, but the idea of making nutritional, basically like you have your nutritional element of like, hey, we boil everything down to like, here's the point. There's a story involved with it. Like this, the point is the point, not the story. Whereas,
yeah, when we try to, when we try to convince somebody of something, we do it in a really like bland way. And we say, that's good enough. Cause I gave you the truth. Instead of like winning somebody's heart by the, like, not just the truth, but the beauty of that truth, like the goodness of that truth.
Behind the truth. Yeah. Like, these commandments, there's a story behind that we're supposed to go with. That's what people remember. Like, we think about our own lives, we can all think back to times where we had difficulty and God fell through. Those are the things that we share with people. There's a story behind those moments. Not just the fact of, yes, God is faithful. That's a true statement. But the discussion of, like, hey, this is the times of God's faithfulness as shown in my life and lives of those around me. We can see the elements, we can touch it, we can feel it, and convey that method, that we can actually convey a truth at that point, versus just stating a doctrinal statement, which is true, but doesn't have the meat or the staying power, because it's divorced of, somewhat divorced of reality. It's like math. Like, it's true, but you teach kids math by, like, hey, here's apples. Here's, you count the apples. So you don't just say, all right, 2 + 2 = 4, and I'll go. That's not how you teach.
Well, and the point of the math is to actually use it, right? Like, we want kids to learn math so that they can actually accurately order their lives and, like, operate, you know? Not just to know how to add numbers on a page. Because that doesn't, who cares? Like, that won't do anything. But that's, I mean, like, if you think about it, truth is there. And it's, like you said it, Jeremy, like, the statement, God is faithful, is a true statement and a good statement. But what we, but the next step of that is like, yeah, but why is that, how, like, why is that a good thing? Why is that a beautiful thing? Why is that a great thing, that God is faithful? And I think that often we just operate on the level, and we talk to people on the level of like these bare facts that, it's not, this isn't the same as just like emotionally trying to like hook somebody to like into the kingdom or like trying to encourage somebody based on emotionalism. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about having substance. But substance that like pushes past the bare facts and like gets to why that substance resonates in us, if that makes sense. That's what my mind goes to.
Do you think it's more difficult to do that today versus like, I mean, I'm just thinking like trying to see the value and out of obedience, out of you know, trying to live out a faithful walk. I think it's, I don't know. My first thought of this is just like, well, it's pretty difficult. And today, because of how cloudy, different worldviews have become and how basically like, you know, from a church perspective, people are so numb to the idea, you know, people outside of the church are so numb to the idea of like they've heard it, the raw boiled down message that you're getting at. They've heard it for so long. They know what the church has to say, because I think the church has largely been bad at showing this level of value to obedience. And so it's just like falling on deaf ears at that point. And there's so many other avenues that people can go to nowadays to have like, I guess, some level that they seem to deem as, you know, some type of value in their life and some type of return. And that's where my mind goes to. It's just like, I think the church probably for a number of years in America especially was pretty bad at just beating over the head on teaching the doctrine and the rules and the substance, and that largely numbed a lot of people, that they didn't see the beauty and the grace and the value. as a part of that, and they didn't see enough active members, fellow Christians, brethren around them actually walking that out to keep them in that way.
Yeah. To your point there, Andrew, like this passage, it says that as Israel lives these out and obeys them, that's when people will see the goodness of them. Mm-hmm. When they actually see it happen in the life of Israel, they will be like blown away, both by their God being near to them, but also they'll just be able to look at the nation and say, we couldn't come up with anything better than what they've got.
Yeah.
They would look at Israel.
They have a recipe for something different. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like whatever they're doing in Israel is better than what we have here. Mm-hmm. That's actually what's amazing. It's like, that's actually the fruit that God's law is supposed to bear in his people's lives is that. Like that it should actually show us, it should show the world like his greatness as we actually live it out. Mm-hmm. It's something you said earlier, Jeremy, reminded me of this. Pairs well with what Andrew said. Like, the backdrop of the commandments that are given to Israel is the fact that they were brought out of slavery, right? So the backdrop of all the rules that are handed is the redemption that's been given to them. Mm-hmm. And that's something that has been lost for a long time. And I think a lot of people grew up in our generation maybe just thinking that, like from their parents or something, like their Christianity to them was just like, they just saw their parents treat it like rules without redemption. And so they're like, well, that's not cool for me. I don't really have an interest in that. Mm-hmm. They didn't necessarily see their parents holding, like, yes, living in the commandments of God, but also like being focused on the redemption of it, like focused on the grace of it in the gospel of it. And I think that we've also had an ability to focus on the rules, but not the glory that those rules bring into our lives. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's just what I think the church is able to do. Like, we can just focus on getting some rules right and correct, and not necessarily, again, going back to this, not just stopping at how do we act correctly, but like, what's the good fruit that comes from acting correctly? What's the beautiful stuff that happens in our homes, in our lives, in our churches, all this stuff? What's the beautiful things that happen when we are acting correctly? Like, that should be the fruit that comes out of it. And that fruit is what pulls people in, not just acting correctly.
Yeah, I was like, I think it's a catch-22 there, where it's like, my point on, I think they didn't have enough people, in America, we didn't have enough people both teaching the value and the glory aspect of it. But then also people, like, it just comes down to the church not actively, like, individual people not living out in their everyday lives. Cause if your, you know, your parents, your fellow Christians and all them don't see that, you know, lived out day by day, then suddenly we just become numb to it as well. And that's where I think it's like a, sort of a catch-22 there on, you know, where then people start to just look other directions. And that's where I think we've gotten to in America as a whole. And I don't know, you know, it's tough to say whether, you know, I know, I guess my point there is like the people of Israel needed to, you know, I guess I'm losing my track of words here, but
Jeremy will pick it up. Maybe.
No, I was going to ask Dave, what, you had notes about this topic, so I'd love to know what your point was, what your notes were in your
prep. Oh man, my notes. I had three things written down on a piece of paper. One of them was to talk about N.D. Wilson, which we did. Then my
that means not David Wilson.
Yes, not David Wilson. So my thought from this is, how do we actually Like, as we keep them and do these, that will be, as it says in verse 6, that will be the wisdom and understanding in the sight of the people. So other people will see us keeping these and doing them, and that will show us wise to people around us. They will see that we're a nation that is wise and understanding. I'm transposing this to Christians today. Like, as we're a new nation, as 1 Peter says, we're now a chosen nation. We are a nation dispersed across all the nations of the world. And so they will look at us and see that's what wisdom looks like. That's what goodness looks like. But I think that something that I miss a lot is, like, I have an easy ability to just focus on, like, progress and following the commands and I think just not doing it in a way that is actually fun. Like, mm-hmm. like there's, I don't know. I think I was kind of, maybe about a month ago, I feel like God started putting these kind of reminders into my life for me and my family as we started doing more family worship more regularly. And just a reminder from a lot of different people and a lot of different, like, outlets were just telling me, like, make sure it's fun, make sure it's enjoyable, make sure it's fun. Like, they were telling, like, make it fun. If you want to do it, make it fun. And if you want your kids to like it, then make it fun. Don't just make it by the book, you know? Mm-hmm. Make it an enjoyable thing. And I guess I'm pulling that out to just obedience as a whole. Like, as I raise a son and as we raise, you know, Lord willing, more kids and all this, like, I'm thinking about, I want them to follow after me. I want this to be known to my children and my children's children and my mm-hmm. Children's children too. Like, if I want that, mm-hmm. then I feel like what will keep people around is not just, boy, did, like, David, my dad or grandpa David or whatever, not just did he know the facts well, and was he, like, a really... Like, not just did he never sin, or, like, did he, you know, whatever. It's not just that. That's, like, the bare minimum, I guess, is what I'm discovering. The yeah. next level of it is, like, I mean, he was legitimately joyful, and he brought joy to people, and he, you know, like, that the beauty, the goodness of it actually was there, not just the orderliness of it, right? Not just living a life mm-hmm. that is orderly. mm-hmm. Not just living a life that, like, makes progress and, you know, like, builds the bank account correctly and the habits of life correctly. Not just that. But a life that actually, like, would show to, I don't know, I guess in my mind, the first people that come to my mind are, like, my kids. Like, a life that shows to my wife and my kids that this is good and great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not just a burden. Like, I want, like, what 1 John says, that his commandments are not a burden to us. Mm-hmm. I want that to be true in my life so that it's really evident for them, which is what brought me here.
And I was like, that's where... the difference to the world today, a lot of the world simply looks at the rules of the church as burdens and, you know, restrictions on, you know, you talk about the churches that have hard stances on, you know, obviously from a doctrinal perspective on whatever the worldview has shifted. So that's where the rubber meets the road, especially today.
Yeah.
Cause I think it's the world has shifted further and further. So if, you know, if we're not, I guess it's tougher to display the value to the world that, you know, has basically shifted further away and wants, you know, nothing to hear about it. I don't know.
Do you have thoughts about that, Jeremy?
Well, something I'm back to saying, harking off, I guess, there's a way to check the box, which is easy to fall into.
Yeah.
There's the difficult way of checking the box with a smile on your face. And then there's a third way of checking the box, smile on the face, and a smile on your heart. And I just think back to, and this has been challenging to me lately, especially life circumstances or whatever. It's like, okay, like, why are we doing what we're doing? And what am I doing? Why am I doing what I'm doing? And how am I doing what I'm doing? Not just what am I doing?
Yeah.
Like, love the Lord God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And then do all things, whether you eat or drink, whatever you do, do it in the glory of God. And I don't want to go into the far in the Christian hedonism argument of we enjoy God most when we, you know, enjoy God. We glorify God the most when we're enjoying Him the most. But just from the standpoint of, like, loving the commandments for the sake of the joy that they give you, the freedom that they actually do give you versus the constraints of doing things for the sake of constraints. Like, living within bounds, like, the analogy of a fish is the most free, not outside of the fishbowl. The fish is the most free in the water. He's more free in the fishbowl than he is on the table. Because he can actually do things and not die.
Yeah.
And there are bounds and parameters, and it's not a perfect analogy, but that's just life.
Yeah.
There are certain ways that our life, God has designed the world to work, and the minute we don't do those things, one, just do them, but also it says, like, later on, talking about giving, God loves a cheerful giver. God doesn't need your money. He wants your heart. We're commanded to give cheerfully. So those things go hand in hand. There's a heart attitude behind everything we do. And that's challenging, because some days, if we're honest, we don't feel like doing it. In our own sin nature, in our flesh, we get tired. And with that, remembering verses like this, saying, okay, like, what story am I telling my wife and kids when I come home from a long day, no matter how life is going at the house or whatever, if I'm gonna do this right, I need to be better at this.
And what story are you gonna choose to tell yourself when you've had a long day too? You gonna choose to reframe it in the reality of the blessings that God has given you and, I also thought, Jeremy, you were talking about, like, the checking the box thing. I think there's a fourth way that I lose sight of a lot, because I'm not often a gracious person, is, like, there's a fourth way where you have a check mark in the box, but it's really messy. Like, it's a messy check mark. It's not, like, done exactly to how you think it ought to be done, you know? Whether it's, like, if you take family worship, for example. Like, you didn't get through all of the things you wanted to get through in reading the Bible that night, or whatever. Like, time didn't allow for X to happen perfectly. So the box is checked. It's checked in a messy way. It's not checked all the way. But that was the only way you could check it with a smile that day, right? Like, that was the only way your family could check it with a smile that day. I feel like that is also, like, that's an acceptable answer that sometimes I don't want to allow. Because I just want things to be like, well, this is what the ideal is, so let's hit it. But I just think that there's a part of that, too, where it's like, yeah, God has called us to things. He gives us, like, commands to walk in. But especially stuff like that, like a family worship thing, like having a goal for your family to worship or for... I mean, you know, another example for that is, like, parents with kids, especially young kids, and, like, getting to church on time when providentially it can be hard. Like, sometimes you check that box in a messy way, right? Like, like, you're sort of there on time or, you know, but that's just, there's still, like, you can choose to go about that with beauty and with, like, joyfulness and everything, or you can choose to become really sour and then show to the world around you, like, that your God is really sour.
I think off of that too, this just piqued my brain on, like, because right now all of us are in a phase with young children and, like, with toddlers, for, you know, for me and Jeremy, like, we have been stressing, trying to stress quite a lot with Lincoln, especially how, you know, the things we're doing from family prayer and from going, you know, making sure that our church together is, you know, the church service is the priority of our week and we're all going, and the behavior in the church service matters and all that. And that's why I think it's good to have this in mind, because right now, when your children are young, you're probably more, you know, you're more apt to just hearken on the obedience perspective of it and trying to, you know, you're trying to guard behavior and you're trying to garner respect for the different things that you're trying to instill in your children. But you must be cognizant as they mature, as they understand, as they grow, to make sure that you're displaying on your end and then also communicating the value, the glory and the beauty in it. And not just sticking to the fact of like, well, you know, my child knows
we follow the rules here.
Yeah, yeah. We follow the rules. We do these things, you know, we do family worship, we do family prayer, we prioritize our church, we prioritize our community group together, like the behaviors that we want from them. You can oftentimes teach those without actually getting to that next level.
Yeah.
And
this is more than just, this is not, I would distinguish this from like, life is hard, so allow yourself to not do a good job. Mm-hmm. That's really not what we're driving at. I think like the hope is like, no, like God has given us commands. So we do want to run in that path. Like that is what we want to run in, but we want to understand that like the commands are not meant to make us miserable. And for a world around us, like how do we combat, you know, like the story that our kids are told all day long about who they are, what a human being is, what a gender is, what whatever, you know, what value a human is, what, you know, sexuality and things like that. The things that the culture tells us all day long, telling us stories all day long, and it's trying to hook people with the beauty of things, right? It's trying to tell people like, this, you will be a, you know, more fulfilled, more beautiful person by doing this, by doing that. And you said something earlier, Andrew, about how it can be harder today because the world feels so distant from the biblical ideals. Which is true in one sense, but I think in another way that contrast is just more shown. So like the church just needs to step up and like, how do we combat that? Well, we combat that by showing them the beauty, like for in the gender world, we combat that by showing them the beauty of a family as God designed it.
Yeah.
Like we show the world the beauty of a man as God designed it, as a woman as God designed them. We hold it up really high and we celebrate it, enjoy it. We show the world that life comes right here, like by following the design, by following the creator. And there's a million, we could draw out a million examples in all the different areas of life with abortion. Like how do you fight that? You fight that by loving the fruitfulness that God has created and baked into humanity, especially with man and woman, husband and wife. So you don't have to just become celebratory. You have to discover the joy that is there in children. You have to discover God's goodness on display there. That's how we, as a church, create a culture that actually does fight against a negative culture. You just build a better one, like build a more positive one, so that when people, even though they might hate it, right? You might have a person next to you who loves abortion and hates a biblical understanding of sexuality and, you know, fill in the blank with like whatever you want to fill in. They might be right next door to you, but like if you are obeying Christ with that joyful heart that gets the beauty of his commandments, then like even if they hate it, then on one level there's this I think a little bit of evidence from scripture of like they're going to still look at your family and be like, but man, like I can't fault them for their family. You know, like I might hate them. I might hate what they believe, but it's working. Like they're happy people. Them seeing that beauty is like this undeniable apologetic that I think part of that is just us doing the hard work of like build joy into the life of your family and mm-hmm. show your family and yourself, teach it to yourself first, how that joy, like do take it seriously when it says that we glorify God and enjoy him forever. Take it seriously and learn how to enjoy God through all the good things he's given you. Like that is something you have to actually learn to do. I think it's something that I've had to learn to do, to enjoy it. And that enjoyment, just pulls us closer to him, makes those commandments not burdensome anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A good one.
That's what, I don't know. That's my, if I have a closing thought, that's just what I think. I mean, as that goes to family and stuff, like it means grace for my family at times, grace for myself at times, patience. But it just means like, it's not all about like getting stuff done or like perfect behavior or like my kids learning all the memory verses in the specified amount of time or mm-hmm. whatever. Like it's not about those things. I want them to enjoy God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's about like getting them to see the value in those things and the value in striving for those things.
The surpassing too. Value, right?
Yeah.
As Paul says. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you guys landed the plane nicely.
Sweet. We landed. We're on the ground. Speaking of planes, last week I spent 6.5 hours in the Atlanta airport waiting for a flight.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it was great.
Just delayed?
No, it wasn't delayed. It was me. I was stupid. I was coming back from a, network conference, and they booked us like a 7:45 departure. And that was the best they could do. I'm not faulting them mm-hmm. for that. But I could either get to the airport at like 3:30 and wait until 7:45, or I could try to get to the airport at 1:30 and get on a standby flight and get home at like 4:00. So I was like, that sounds better. So that's what I tried, and I did not get it. So the standby list goes by. And I was number 12. And like,
and you were just sitting at the airport.
I was just sitting there, saw a few people get onto the standby. Like, they got the standby and I didn't. I was like, all right, this is going to happen. So, Atlanta Airport, big airport, by the way.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Very big airport.
They have some excellent coffee shops there.
Yep.
And
you spend 6 hours there, you're going to get some good coffee somewhere.
That's correct. So, anyway, that's there you go. Planes landed. Here we are.
Man, you landed that plane even better than I thought at that Atlanta airport.
That's right. The recommendation. Anybody got any recommendations? Anybody? It would be good if we had one that was like fitting with this. But I mean, we sort of recommended some stuff with this.
Yeah, if you look at, there's an N.D. Wilson talk on this, like called How, which we can put in the show notes. Let me find it. It's from Grace Agenda, like 2021. How to read the story that you're in, or something like that.
Okay.
Which is pretty good.
Okay.
It's similar. How to read the story you're in by N.D. Wilson, Grace Agenda. It's pretty good. Just in general. All right. And his book, Notes from the Tilt-A-Whirl, is also, I think, really good on this topic.
Okay.
Just from.
I have not read that one, but I'll put it on my list after I get done with my current reading list.
I have it if you want to borrow it.
Perfect. Only thing I was going to recommend on the enjoying side of things, my son right now really likes, well, I'll save this. Actually, I'm going to save that for the next podcast. I'll tease that. But
oh, there's a cliffhanger.
Ooh, yeah. Haddon enjoys something.
Haddon's enjoying something. He's enjoying getting into trouble because he can reach more things now and walk around now, and he has made good use of that.
He's fully mobile.
Yeah. Yep. But one thing that I'm enjoying is that I mentioned Demon Hunter earlier. They put out a new album called Exile, and it's really good. So it's really good. really good hardcore music that is really pretty deep too. So there you go. If you want something to enjoy and that's something that you would enjoy, then you can enjoy that. Yeah. And enjoy God through it, because they're all good Christian guys making music in that band. And they have been for, I think, like 25 years, which is insane. But you think this podcast is going to be going?
Michael Vick's been around. It'll be going for 25
yeah,
years.
Yeah, we're
going
to be doing...
At that point, we'll be... We might be 100 episodes at that point.
We're going to get to 99 and pause for...
Just take a
like
long pause.
20 years
build the
and
suspense.
Then... Okay. Sounds I mean, like I a think, plan.
Yeah, I was like, I think the one closing piece that I guess kind of sums this all up is like just to remember that as far as family discipleship goes, all of us, you know, we are all husbands and dads here, and like we are always discipling our household, whether we know it or not. Mm. So just to be always cognizant of, you know, as we're talking about here, the life that we are leading.
And, yeah.
You know, we can either be discipling them properly or discipling them in not so good ways by our behavior.
Right on.
There you go.
Right on. Well, I think we did land the plane, as Jeremy eloquently said. And
landed the plane, man. And we are regular pilots.
Regular pirates and pilots. That's both.
We do, man.
All right. Well, on that note, that was just as eloquent as the first thing you said right there. On that note, we'll wrap it up and see you guys next time for episode 94. So until then, we'll see you next time.